afternoon. Welcome to Cross Currents. I'm Carolyn Heldman. Coming up on today's show, part two of our event with Ken Rudin, with Rick Palacio and Steve House, the chair people of the Colorado Democratic and Republican parties, respectively, at Pepke Auditorium last month.
Steve, Rick was talking about the reaction he got when he met Hillary Clinton back, you know, in Washington. When Donald Trump has these rallies, and Bernie Sanders had a similar thing too, when Donald Trump has these rallies, there are 20,000 people there. And I don't know if that translates into victory or at least, you know, winning in the states, but he's touching a chord that the John McCains, the Mitt Romneys did not.
He is, and like Rick, I've had an opportunity to spend one-on-one time with Donald Trump, and he wasn't my first choice. I'll see if I can arrange that for you. When I met Donald Trump, he wasn't my first choice. I thought, can a business guy, even though I'm a business guy sitting in a political chair today, can this business guy really be the guy, right? Because I'd heard some of the inflammatory stuff he said. One-on-one and in a small group, he's a genius. It's really amazing, the difference, which both scares me and impresses me, right? It's a little bit, you know, like, how can the guy be so good at asking you about your life, your business? How can he treat the groundskeeper and the CEO exactly the same? Because he does, and it's really amazing to watch. So, you know, is this a marketing strategy to try to win an election in an anti-establishment year when you really say, and I met a lot of people who have been on boards with him and other things, and he's not a difficult guy to get along with. He really isn't. So that surprises me, and I'm telling you the truth. This is my interactions with him. I had several one-on-ones with him and small groups of other business people walk away and go, wow, that's the guy that I really approve of. That's the guy that I really see. Now, when he goes on stage, if he would just be a little less insensitive and a little bit, you know, less stupid at sometimes with what he says, it's great. I think Donald Trump, you said Donald's kind of hanging around my neck, but he couldn't have a better opponent to run against, in my mind, because one of the struggles I have, because I really think that when Barack Obama got elected, I told my family as a Republican, he's my president too. Because I don't care who gets elected, they belong to me just as much as they do to the other political party. What I see in Hillary Clinton that worries me is I just don't know if she knows what the truth is. And that really worries me, especially, you know, the Colin Powell statements and some of the other stuff. I do believe you're right. I'll bet she is brilliant. I really believe that. Because I think she was one smart lawyer coming out of college. I've seen really impressive intellectual stuff from her. But man, oh man, why are we as Americans suffering with two people with 60% disapproval ratings at this stage of what we need? And I struggle with that. So the bottom line for me is I would tell Hillary to be more vulnerable as well. And I would say admit some mistakes, right? If you put an email server in and Colin Powell really wasn't the reason, just admit it and move on. Because the American people need to focus on getting a better economy. The Western slope is dying right now. Some states are really struggling. We need these two to step up and do what they're capable of. She's brilliant. I'm telling you, this guy's got a lot of good things going for him. I don't want to see the rest of it from either of them. I want my country better.
But you've talked about the difficulty that Hillary Clinton has in telling the truth. We both know I can give you a laundry list of Donald Trump saying things that he didn't say when we know he said it. Or he'll say things like, I saw Muslims celebrating in New Jersey after 9/11, which never happened. You know, he'll say, I was down in 9/11 at the World Trade Center with the rescuers. He wasn't there. I mean, Ted Cruz's father worked with Lee Harvey Oswald. What? I mean, no, I mean, I'm not, my problem is that, you know, there are Republicans who are saying to me the only reason they would consider Trump is they're afraid of Hillary Clinton and the Supreme Court. But my goodness, I've never seen a candidate who just has, you know, we talk about how PolitiFact and how all these truth squads are out there. It doesn't affect him. Who's the person who said, who are you going to believe? I think it was Groucho Marx who said, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes? I mean, and sometimes Trump will do that. He'll just say things, and we know it is blatantly false.
You know, that's a very, very good point, and obviously we struggle with that very same thing. But I think the point that you've got to get to is, here's why this is a race that's still a race. Donald Trump gets in trouble for what he says. Hillary Clinton is in trouble for what she's done. And you know what? I'm not going to disparage her other than to say, look, if you hire a nanny when your husband's the governor and you hire it as a security guard to make the taxpayers pay for your nanny, that's just wrong. That's corrupt, right? If you take your chief of staff and have her scheduling major donors from your foundation to see people in government, Those things are just wrong. They're unethical. You wouldn't pass a ethics 101. So both of them have serious challenges. I'm not debating that. He has a challenge with what he's talking about. Was there a sniper in Bosnia on a helicopter? You know, I mean, those type of things didn't happen. So you're talking about an individual who has also told falsehoods. That's the part of politics that, frankly, somebody from the outside like me hates, right? I don't like this part of it. But they've both told big whopper lies in the process. I think the reason why Trump has a chance is because some of the things Hillary's done that are in her record are going to be the things that people hear about the next 78 days.
Let me just ask one more follow-up to that. I mean, the two things who have the two candidates who have said outrageous things, but Hillary Clinton, for all her faults, for all her lies, with quotes around lies, you know, one person's lies may be another person's misstatements or whatever. I don't remember any other candidate, including Hillary Clinton, talking about Mexicans and Muslims and the Indiana judge is obviously prejudiced because he's Mexican. And how could and Carly Fiorina, look at that face and that disabled reporter. I mean, it's beyond an ideological divide. There's a cruelty there that, you know, you talk about the rogues we've covered in the past, the George Wallaces, the Pat Buchanans. I've never seen, and his voters seem to eat it up. You know, the famous Donald Trump quote that I could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and my supporters won't leave me. I don't know if that holds true anymore because there are a lot of people who are just saying he may have, you know, every time we think he's crossed a line, like with John McCain or the Kahn family, somehow he didn't cross a line. But sometimes I get a sense that cumulatively, this is just going to just, you know, be just too much for many voters.
It may be. I think you brought up a really important point. And that important point is that Hillary Clinton is a far better politician than Donald Trump. I don't think there's any dispute about it. So she knows what to say, what not to say. I ran for office once in this state. And I think when you're a candidate, at first when you're a candidate, you kind of got to learn what it's like. You have to do this as a state chair too, right? You first get into it and you have to figure it out. There, I could give you a laundry list of things that Hillary Clinton did that hurt people. And so Donald Trump talks about hurting people. She's hurt people. She's a much better politician. I think what's going to happen is, I think in November, the decision is going to be, do we continue down the path we've gone down the last 4 years or not? And the choice is going to be between a politician and a non-politician. And the politician may very well win. I mean, that could absolutely happen because she is a better politician, better at speaking. She hasn't done a press conference in 261 days. People in my party go, that's crazy. How can you not stand up and answer questions? I say, that's probably smart, right? Because that's a better way to do it. I've heard people in my party say, send my candidate on a 90-day cruise with no internet connection. He'll win the election, right?
And there's truth to that.
So there's a difference between where we are. And I still think the decision is very much going to come down to what do people believe they want to have happen after November? And that's going to come down to a policy versus politics decision. And I think the reason why Hillary Clinton's leading in a lot of the polls, not all of them, there are 18 where Trump is leading by a small amount. I think the reason why she is because
she's... Are you talking about nationally or battleground states?
No, nationally. And I think that she's a much better politician. There's no question about it. She probably has a better campaign team, too.
Well, I think I disagree with Steve on what this election is going to come down to. I think this comes down to is the difference between someone who has spent her entire life fighting for other people, Children's Defense Fund, the formation of the Children's Health Insurance Program, all of the things that she has done over her career fighting for other people, and someone who has done nothing but fought for themselves and squashed the little guy along the way. And that's what we see when Donald Trump is on stage, is disparaging anyone who doesn't look like him, who doesn't think like him, therefore they can't be part of his club. And Hillary Clinton has said, no, everyone deserves a part in this American dream, and we're stronger together. And that's why I think she's going to win in November.
There's a report, it seems to be an indication that Hillary Clinton has cut advertising in Colorado. Do you think the state is in the bag? I mean, obviously, in the last four or five elections, they've been pretty close in this state. Do you think that's a wise decision? And the second part of that question is, there's a debate in the Hillary Clinton camp whether to go after disaffected Republicans and moderate Republicans, but by doing that, does she alienate the Bernie Sanders people who really want her to stay to a progressive center?
I think that the Bernie Sanders people are are with her already, 90%. Those that are going to be with her are already with her. I mean, she's very clearly a better candidate than Donald Trump, and they understand that this is a critical election. So I think having a lot of Republicans in my own family that have sent me text messages that said, I've never voted for a Democrat in my entire life, but I'm going to vote for Hillary. I could never vote for Donald Trump. I mean, that's certainly not scientific, but given the number of people that we see doing things like that across the country, I think it's going to make a difference. It's no secret, the first part of the question, that the Hillary campaign has pulled down their paid advertisements from around the state. But what we do have is something that we use as Democrats in Colorado to win. We have a ground game. We have over 200 employees that are spread across our 64 counties. We have 17 offices, and there I would doubt that there are very few people in this room that have not had a telephone call from one of our organizers to talk to them about the election. That's how Hillary is going to win in Colorado. It's a ground game. It's talking to friends, talking to neighbors, and things like that.
I want to get to a bunch of audience questions, but I just want to talk briefly about the Senate race. Why? I mean, when I think of 2014, and maybe that was an aberration, a great year for the Republican Party, but Cory Gardner, I thought, was an exceptional candidate. He cleared the field. Everybody backed away. I thought Mark Udall ran a bad campaign. But for whatever reason, the Republican Party seemed united. Given the fact that since he was elected in 2010, the feeling was always that Michael Bennett was a vulnerable, weak incumbent, why didn't any Republican giant step up and seek the nomination?
Well, let's go back just to clear up one thing about the state that I think that is important to remember. People ask me if this state is a purple state or is it a solid blue state. That's something that you mentioned earlier. Think about 2014, the last time this state ran a major election. We had four of the seven congressmen elected are Republicans. We have two senators. One was up for election, in this case Udall, and Cory Gardner won. Bob Beaupre lost by a very small margin to Governor Hickenlooper. We have 49 of the 50 or the 100 seats in the state legislature, and I'll bet you in the counties we have something greater than 60% of all the counties that have commissioners and sheriffs that are Republicans. So this state is not a blue state. Seven out of the last 10 presidential elections have gone red as well. So I don't subscribe to the idea that 14 showed us that we were a blue state. We're actually stronger red.
You don't see a shift. You don't see last 8 years of Obama. You don't see a shift. More Latinos, more young voters. You don't see an ideological shift in Colorado?
Well, if you're talking about demographics, I see the shift in demographics. But the results in 14 were heavily Republican, right? We had the state Senate. We didn't have it before either. So in 14, Republicans in this state were elected. We have more counties that are red than blue. I get the fact that those trends may actually change it so that it's more blue than red, but who can possibly say that the state's not purple right now other than looking at a poll, right? Now, we have our own internal polls. Like Rick, we have great data systems, and we have a completely different ground game this year. We have lots and lots of people. There are also people. We had rallies with Donald Trump, and we took 15,000-plus emails from those two rallies. 82% of the people who signed up for those rallies, we had never talked to before. They're all people that are new to the game. Many of them were unaffiliated. It's a number of soft Democrats, a lot of inactive voters. So I think this state's going to be very, very close before it's over. To answer your question about the Senate race, we're halfway through the game. We started about 2 months ago in the general election. Daryl Glenn is a very good candidate. I like Michael Bennett. I have affection for Michael when we've had a chance to talk. But I also think that the question people are asking themselves now is, what do we lose by Michael Bennett not going back to Washington? Because from my perspective, he hasn't done enough for us. I think that's why his numbers for people who think he should be reelected are sitting at 38%. I think we have to see how this is going to play out. If I had to predict today, do I think Michael Bennett will get reelected? Yes. But do I believe that that's ultimately the outcome that I would accept? No, because I think we have plenty of time with 78 days to go to make that race very, very close, and I hope it ultimately ends up that way.
Rick, is 2014 an outlier for Colorado, or is it moving more blue?
I think that we're slowly moving blue, but Colorado, in my opinion, is the same as Steve's, is that we're a purple state. We're a battleground state, and I think we're going to continue to see that for several elections to come.
Anyway, I'd love to open this up for audience questions about third parties, about race for Senate, Congress, and what's going on in Colorado and money. So what's your state your name?
Carter Barger from Carbondale. Used to be in New Hampshire for 42 years. We met you there, Ken. There's been some speculation about Trump boycotting the all or one or all of the election,
debates.
And I was just curious as to your opinion, if should that happen, what impact do you think that would have on the outcome of the election?
Well, I keep thinking that, you know, just like with the taxes, how can he say that I will not release my taxes and it's nobody's business? I think everybody would be outraged in it by that, and yet that doesn't seem to be the case, or at least not yet the case. The fact is, he has said that it's rigged, that he's colluded. The Hillary Clinton campaign picked these dates to coincide with NFL games, when of course that's not true. These dates were selected last year. I can't imagine him skipping the debate. I do know that at the end of the Republican battles, he decided to stop debating, and I don't think he was doing... I know he says he won every debate. I don't think he did win every debate, or I think he did pretty poorly in them. But he's never debated one-on-one. Hillary Clinton has debated Barack Obama one-on-one, Bernie Sanders one-on-one. When she ran for the Senate for the first time in 2000, Rick Lazio in New York, remember Lazio came over with that pledge he wanted to sign. So she's used to these one-on-one debates. I don't think she's a great debater. I think she's a good debater. I think Donald Trump can lose his train of thought, as I just did this very second. even worse, I think Donald Trump is the kind of guy, I've never said this before in my life, he's the kind of guy who could sit on his microphone. So anyway, look, I think he has to debate. I think we expect it of him, but nothing would surprise me.
Yes. By the way, I want to put that on Facebook, that a political pundit started tonight by sitting on his microphone. There's going to be a lot of reaction to that. I guarantee it.
That was the biggest applause I got of the night.
Well, first of all, I don't think for a minute he'll avoid the debates. I think they'll have three debates. I wish they had four or five, although there can be too many debates. I think he will go to the debates. I think they may be the most interesting debates in presidential history. We'll see what happens. I hope we get to some policy in the debate discussions.
I would like to say one thing. There's an elephant in the room that we haven't mentioned. In his book, The Art of the Deal, Mr. Trump said, the best thing to do is tell the biggest lie. The person who will tell the biggest lie gets the most attention and will win. The biggest lie? Where are the tax returns? What is he hiding? Why doesn't anybody care? This is very upsetting to me.
I don't disagree that we should see the tax returns. I'm going to give him until, you know, the fall time when he gets past an audit. I mean, I have my own tax returns, and I have gone through an audit, and I don't think I would have released them. But there's a time when he needs to do that. I absolutely agree with you on that.
And running for president.
I know that, but I also think that he needs to bring his taxes forward at some point before November 8th, and I expect that at somehow he will ultimately do that.
But that's admitting what he's doing now is wrong, and he just doesn't feel that what his tactics are now are wrong.
His statement on that has been that he's under audit and he doesn't want to release his tax returns while he's under audit, right? I mean, I saw the Clinton taxes yesterday, and I have a lot of people in the Republican Party who are upset about the fact that she donated $1,042,000 to charity and $1 million was to the Clinton Foundation.
Yes, but at least you have the opportunity to judge her on that,
right,
by seeing what she released.
I like all kinds of Republicans, want those tax returns. We do.
I do have a question that I can't answer, and I've been involved, so it's directed at you. What impact can you tell me do the debates have in terms of the final election results? I'm not sure they have any, but you tell me what you think.
They have in history, not always. For example, I mean, they started with Kennedy and Nixon in 1960. It was a dead-even race going into the debates. They had their debates. Nixon looked great on the radio, But at the end, it was also a dead-even answer at the end. In 1980, Carter would only debate once with Ronald Reagan, to his misfortune. Reagan wiped the floor with him. Reagan was a right-wing extremist until that debate, and suddenly everybody said, this guy could be our next president. Carter, I thought, was a disaster. Reagan was masterful. That mattered. Otherwise, look, you talk about Dan Quayle with the headlights, but Bush Quayle won 40 out of 50 states that year. So ultimately, I don't know what the debates mean. Remember when in the first Reagan-Mondale debate, when Reagan was winning like like he was going to win 49 states. He was a disaster. That he like almost got old before our eyes. In the second debate, he recovered and was great with that great line about, "I'm not going to make an issue of my opponent's youth and inexperience." Remember that great line, which Mondale cracked up, and that was the end of the election right there. For the most part, it doesn't make a difference, but it certainly can, especially if the election is close.
Well, I actually have a question for both of our chairs here. The challenge that I think Donald Trump has created for a lot of, I suppose you would call them just regular conservative Republicans, is that they're just very offended by him as his temperamentally just unfit and that sort of thing. And some have come out publicly against that. But as chairs of the respective parties, obviously both of you have a strong loyalty to your individual parties. But my question to both of you would be, how low does a candidate have to go before even you would say, you know, if Hitler on the Republican side and Stalin on the Democrat side were running, I mean, where would you draw the line and say, I can't support this human being anymore?
Can I start here? I think in the case of Donald Trump, you're exactly right. But I would remind people that the Republican Party created Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the nominee because they elected him to be their nominee. The Republican Party today is not the same Republican Party that it was 20 years ago, and it's left a lot of Republican, old-time Republicans behind. And I think there is going to be a place for those old-school fiscal conservative Republicans, and I think in this election it's going to be Hillary Clinton. But what happens to the Republican Party moving forward, I think, is a real question, because Steve and I have had this conversation in the past, where I believe, and I think we both believe, that we should have a strong two-party system. You need the give and take and the conversation that goes with it. If Donald Trump takes the Republican Party down with him, then what happens to the Republican Party moving forward? If I were the chair of the Republican Party, I would have not supported Donald Trump, because he has, every time we think he's gone too low, he goes lower than he did before, and he continues that downward trajectory. But as far as being the Democratic Party chair, I've never had a candidate that has gone so low that I needed to denounce.
Well, if I were the Democratic Party chair, I wouldn't have supported Hillary Clinton either, but that's because I don't really think she's trustworthy. And I think the answer to your specific question, though, is there's a line. There's no question about it. I mean, if something happens, if there's some action taken, if there's something that I look at that says, okay, this person being president would be detrimental to the country. And while I think there are some aspects of both of their personalities that I worry about, I also know that we have a system where we have a Congress and a Supreme Court, and we have checks and balances. And, you know, at this point in time, the American people, I disagree that Donald Trump is a product of the Republican Party. I think Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are the product of Americans being way too complacent about what they're getting from the people that we elected across the board. I don't think it's a Democrat or Republican problem. I think it's all of us, because otherwise we wouldn't have had the situation we were in. But yeah, is there a point? Have I thought about where that line is? Certainly at times I've thought about where that line is. I just haven't seen it yet. Look, but here, answer me a question. How does Hillary Clinton stand up and say that every woman who claims that she's been sexually abused should be believed, but then she abuses Juanita Broderick and Paula Jones and all the people that she's done in her life? This is not an angel. Neither of these people are angels. I mean, Hillary Clinton has lied about things no one should ever lie about. I don't know why, because I think she's brilliant. I think she's probably very smart. I think Donald Trump is very smart. Why are they doing what they're doing? I don't know. I'm not them. I'm not.
Ken, we have a question here.
This is my philosophical question, and how can we move Colorado above the fray? And you guys have both touched on it. But how can we start to move politics into the realm of what we are for instead of what we are against? And I think that's what's going to ultimately engage millennials, not politics of hate, not politics of what we're against, but what do we stand for? And how can we start to move the conversation in Colorado? And what can you guys do as your respective party chairs to do that?
Actually, if Rick and I were chairs for another decade, we'd probably get it done. And I mean that sincerely. I like this man. I think he's got, you know, a great head on his shoulder. We had some, you know, discussions here and there. We get into particular candidates we don't agree, but I think we both believe that America's at a point where healthcare is not exactly what it needs to be, but even I agree that we shouldn't completely eliminate Obamacare. I think there's some things we need to change it because it's not viable in some respects. We both believe the economy needs to grow faster. We both believe we need to deal with entitlements differently. We both believe that Colorado as a state is three or four different environments. There's the Western Slope, there's the I-25 corridor, there's the Eastern Plains, and there's the South. All of those things are things we should have an intelligent, open discussion about. And that the only way we're going to do that is to move past this partisan bickering that we do at the state and federal level. That's going to take better leaders than we've seen so far, or certainly recently, to get us there. But I think our intentions are good. I think we want to go there. And I think the reason why people are abandoning political parties is we haven't taken the step you just suggested.
I think as Coloradans, we're a little different than other states in that we have a long history of getting things done across party lines. And it's part of just the general Colorado tradition, right? You don't live up here in the mountains without working together with your friends and your neighbors to build something. And that's a community. And in the state legislature, we're forced to sit down with our counterparts on the other side every session to come up with a budget. It's constitutionally required in Colorado, but still it forces people to sit down and have a face-to-face conversation about budget priorities. And I think we can move some of that into the national level by moving some of those really hard-working Colorado legislators into the Congress. And I'm going to put my two plugs in. We've got one right here in Gail Schwartz, who has a great history of working across party lines to get things done, and Morgan Carroll in the 6th CD in Aurora. So we need to make sure that we're supporting the candidates that are living our ideals, and we need to do that not just with our money, but also knocking on doors and encouraging them to go and sit next to their counterparts to make sure that they're getting things done for the people of our state.
I also believe, by the way, that Rick and I would not disagree about the fact that 77% graduation rate in our high schools is a travesty. Right. I mean, if we just took that one issue and said, Democrats, Republicans, figure out why 77% graduation rate happens and fix it, and why third grade reading levels are at 40%. Those are the kind of things I think that lead to economic prosperity, lead to better lives. We know we can do it. We don't agree on the solutions always, but it's time to have the conversation.
I was just going to say that one answer is not Washington. It seems like if anything is going to happen for the better in this country, it's going to be in the state legislatures, state and local government, not in Washington, because they seem just incapable of anything accomplishing. Our last question.
Hello. It's been great having you all here this afternoon. Obamacare is actually called the Affordable Health Care Act. I'd just like to point that out to everybody. Rick just touched on two races in Colorado. The 3rd Congressional District, which is one of the largest congressional districts in the country, goes all the way to the state of Utah and all the way to your hometown, Rick. And the other is with Morgan Carroll and Kaufman and Tipton and Gail Schwartz. Those are highly contested races, and they're being watched all over the country. If those both went for Democrats, do you think that might have an opportunity, Ken, for the whole House of Representatives to go Democratic?
Well, you know, it's very hard to say for sure what effect Donald Trump will have at the bottom of the ticket. I think of Walter Mondale in 1984. He lost 49 states, and yet the Democrats picked up seats in the Senate that year. So there's not always a correlation between top of the ticket. But I've never seen, since Goldwater, to be honest, I've never seen as many Republicans running away. We were talking about Mike Kaufman earlier, that he had an ad basically distancing himself from Donald Trump. Mark Kirk in Illinois said he won't vote for him. John McCain is scared to death of the effect of Donald Trump with the Latino population. I can't see the Democrats winning control of the House. They need to pick up a net gain of 30. I think the way the lines are drawn, that's not going to happen. But the Senate is definitely in play. Democrats need a net gain of 4, and there are at least 7 Republican seats that is in a clear jeopardy. So that's something to watch.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. If you missed the show or would like to hear it again, go to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Have a great afternoon.